is Kristen Kreisel.
Kreisel,
thank you. She's going to be telling us about keeping an eye on chlamydia gonorrhea conjunctivitis in the United States, 2010 to 2015. Welcome.
So I'm taking the perinatal complications in a little different spin here. So I'm going to be talking this morning about chlamydia and gonorrhea conjunctivitis in infants. So chlamydia and gonorrhea are the two most commonly reported sexually transmitted diseases in the United States. The prevalence of these infections in pregnant women is estimated at 2 to 20% for chlamydia and less than 1% for gonorrhea, and are especially important to monitor as infants born to infected mothers are at high risk for perinatal transmission. The most frequent clinical manifestation of chlamydial and gonococcal infections in infants is conjunctivitis, occurring in 30 to 50% of those born to infected mothers. The clinical presentation of conjunctivitis can be extremely variable, ranging from mild to severe swelling of the eyelids with a watery or pussy discharge. The conjunctiva can become red and thickened and may bleed when stroked with a swab. A pseudomembrane may form, and the infection can extend to the subconjunctival tissue and cornea. And all of this can lead to ulceration or scarring of the conjunctiva or cornea, resulting in corneal opacification and ultimately lead to visual impairment. The CDC testing recommendation states that direct fluorescent antibody, or DFA, tests are the only FDA-approved test technology for the identification of chlamydia and gonorrhea from ocular specimens. However, laboratories performing in-house validations can receive CLIA waivers to use other test technologies. There is no case definition specific to chlamydial or gonococcal conjunctivitis. Instead, these infections fall under the general case definition for chlamydia and gonorrhea, and a case is confirmed by a positive laboratory result from an ocular specimen. The STD treatment guidelines released in 2015 recommends the use of erythromycin base or ethosuccinate to treat infants with chlamydial conjunctivitis and ceftriaxone to treat infants with gonococcal conjunctivitis. And as a reminder, both infections are nationally notifiable, and as such, all ocular specimens positive for either chlamydia or gonorrhea should be reported to your local health authority for subsequent reporting to CDC. Prophylactic treatments are often used as a means of preventing these infections. For many years, silver nitrate was the prophylaxis of choice, but its use was discontinued in the United States and a number of other countries to prevent the chemical conjunctivitis that can result from the use of this drug. Erythromycin replaced silver nitrate as the prophylactic agent of choice for conjunctival infection in newborns and is the only remaining option for prophylaxis in the U.S. and Canada. However, due to concerns related to its effectiveness against both chlamydia and gonorrhea conjunctivitis infections, prophylaxis with erythromycin has been discontinued in the UK, Norway, Sweden, and Denmark for many years, and in 2015, the Canadian Pediatric Society recommended discontinuing prophylaxis and instead focusing on improving STD screening in pregnant women. The US is now considering a revision of its regulations, but needs to know what its surveillance options are as they relate to chlamydial and gonococcal conjunctivitis infections in infants. So this all led us to question what the data from the National STD Surveillance System can tell us about the burden of chlamydial and gonococcal conjunctivitis infections in infants under 1 year of age in the United States. We used chlamydia and gonorrhea case report data reported to CDC from all 50 states and DC during 2010 to 2015. We included infants aged under 1 year with a specimen source of either eye or conjunctiva, and performed a descriptive analysis to calculate rates per 100,000 live births and evaluate cases by demographics, year, and state. We started with a little over 5,000 chlamydia or gonorrhea cases reported to CDC with an age between 0 and 5 and a positive laboratory report with a specimen collection date between January 2010 and December 2015. When restricting to cases reported from the 50 U.S. states and the District of Columbia in infants less than 1 year of age, the total number of cases reported to 3,703. However, when restricting to a specimen site of either eye or conjunctiva, nearly 85% of cases were excluded, taking the total number of cases down to 563. We chose such a restrictive case definition to make these analyses as specific as possible. Of the 563 cases meeting our case definition, chlamydia accounted for 92.5% and gonorrhea accounted for 7.5% of infections. Cases were similar by sex, with 48.9% in males and 50.8% in females, and most cases were in black, non-Hispanic infants at 36.2%. These are data showing the rates of reported chlamydial and gonococcal conjunctivitis cases in infants less than 1 year of age during 2010 to 2015. You can see that rates were relatively low and stable for gonococcal conjunctivitis. However, rates of conjunctivitis caused by chlamydia were consistently higher and more variable than those caused by gonorrhea. We then aimed to evaluate case rates by state and found quite a few variations. We found 13 states that actually reported zero cases during 2010 to 2015, such as Louisiana and Mississippi, which is interesting as we know that these states have a large burden of chlamydia and gonorrhea infections among women in their jurisdictions. We also observed the highest rates of cases in the mid-Atlantic, northeastern, and midwestern parts of the country. What we don't know based on these data, however, are reporting and screening practices in these jurisdictions. We see variation, but we're not quite sure what's going on, which led us to our next question, which is, what are the limitations of the National STD Surveillance System in monitoring these infections? And in order to answer that question, we reached out to a handful of the jurisdictions with the highest numbers of cases for further information. And those jurisdictions were Florida, New York State, New York City, Ohio, Tennessee, and Virginia. So these six jurisdictions were gracious enough to give us answers to a variety of questions we had that could have an impact on the data we were analyzing. Outlined here are the questions that we asked and the consensus response from the jurisdictions. The first question we asked was what the source of report was for the chlamydial and gonococcal conjunctivitis cases in infants. We wanted to know, for example, if the reports were coming from the same provider or if it was a mix of reporting providers across the jurisdictions. The consensus response was that the reports were coming from a variety of providers across the jurisdictions, and if there was more reporting from one particular provider or hospital, it could be that it was a birthing or children's hospital, so you would expect to see those higher numbers being reported. Another response was that it was difficult to obtain specific provider information because that level of detail is not typically captured in STD surveillance systems. And another issue that came up was the fact that oftentimes the source of the specimen is coded as either unknown or other, or is even left blank. Quite a few of the sites that we contacted actually found higher numbers of cases than what we found, but they actually included infants that had a specimen source of either unknown, other, or even a null value. So we decided to go back and look at the national data, and you can see that adding in the restriction of a specimen site of eye or conjunctiva reduced the total number of cases by over 3,100. And we also found that nearly 55% of these 3,100 excluded cases were listed as having a specimen source of other, unknown, or the field was left blank. The second question we asked was whether there had been any targeted efforts to increase the reporting of these infections. And the consensus response was that there had not been any targeted efforts at physician education or increased screening coverage to improve case detection or reporting, and that the increases seen could be an artifact of the increase in ELR versus paper reporting, although interestingly, most sites reported a low percent of ELR. The third question was whether the reports they receive are primarily lab or provider reports. And the consensus response was that most reporting is lab-based and is a mix of paper and ELR, but some are direct provider reports. And the final question we asked was what test technology was being used. And the responses were a mix of culture, DFA, DNA probe, and NAT testing. And in some jurisdictions, a large percentage of testing was being done by NATs. So this further investigation helped us to identify the main limitations of chlamydial and gonococcal conjunctivitis data in infants. First, some jurisdictions may not be reporting these cases at all, which is contributing to an underestimate of the burden of disease. Second, specimen collection site is often listed as other, unknown, or is even left blank, instead of being coded as eye or conjunctiva, which is likely the biggest contributor to an underestimate of the true burden of disease in the U.S. Third, some surveillance systems are not capable of capturing specific provider information, making it difficult to track reporting by specific providers. And two other issues that need to be considered are the type of reporting and the test technology used. For instance, more complete reporting would be expected from jurisdictions receiving primarily ELR, and from those using a test technology with higher sensitivity. Therefore, these identified limitations led us to determine that any observed changes we see in reported cases may actually be due to how the data are captured, are collected and or captured in the local jurisdictions versus an actual change. So what are our conclusions from these analyses? Since we know that prophylaxis options are limited, surveillance of these infections is important. Second, surveillance of these infections is heavily affected by how the data are collected and captured in each project area, as well as if they're being reported at all. Given the limitations identified, case report data likely underestimate the true burden of disease in the U.S., and as such may not be useful for monitoring these infections. However, despite knowing these data are an underestimate, we still want to aim to make the data as complete as possible. So this is just a reminder to please report these infections. All chlamydia and gonorrhea infections are nationally notifiable regardless of age or specimen type, and as such, all positive laboratory reports for either chlamydia or gonorrhea from infants should be reported to your local health authority for subsequent reporting to CDC. However, due to the limitations we identified in these analyses, CDC will be investigating alternative data sources to accurately monitor chlamydia and gonococcal conjunctivitis cases in infants in the U.S. I just want to thank my colleagues at CDC and also our contacts at the local jurisdictions for their invaluable insight. Thank you.
All right, we have quite a few minutes for questions, so please.
Hi, I'm Mara Larson. I work in North Carolina, and thank you for your presentation. When I started in my position at the state, I really dove into the reporting requirements. In our electronic disease reporting system, we actually have a classification for ophthalmia. Mm-hmm. So I was all like, we got to do it. I got to reclassify the babies to this. And, you know, I talked with Lizzie and Hillard and realized that by that time it had changed that all infant cases need to be reported just in the main way. Mm-hmm. So could you tell me if on your slide North Carolina is not, it looked like we aren't, but I can tell you
I'll
we are, because I review every child STD case, and so I'm now wondering if maybe our data isn't translating, and so I'm so glad you brought this up, because here, you know, if we were in a relationship, I feel like I'm telling you stuff, but if you're not receiving it, then there's a disconnect. So that looks like you're not getting anything from it.
So I think my suggestions would be that the two main limiting things that kind of excluded cases were whether or not the specimen source was listed as eye or conjunctiva, and how the age was defined. So we included infants under 1 year of age, but sometimes age is left blank, sometimes it's just not a very complete variable sometimes. A lot of times we will get zero as the age, but we don't know whether that's 0 months or 0 weeks, or it's kind of all over the place. So, I mean, I can certainly do a little more investigating when I'm back in the office and see what we can find.
We're getting ready to start switching over to HL7, so mm-hmm. maybe that's something of particular importance.
I think another limitation, too, is that, and I kind of was maybe even expecting this question, was that the lab reports that come in don't always have a specimen source of
eye.
We do.
I mean, we do. We have both. We have the age in it.
So it's not necessarily the state's fault, per se, that information is missing.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hi, thank you so much for your talk. I'm an OBGYN in New York, and I'm wondering a little bit about, you mentioned this briefly in your talk, about possible resistance to erythromycin ointment, and I just hadn't heard much about that, and I was wondering if that comes up in your data, if that's sort of in this document, because that would really change the way we practice if we don't have a good prophylactic treatment afterwards.
Right, and so, you know, I don't necessarily know that resistance is an issue for chlamydia so much as that it's just not effective against chlamydia. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's kind of why we're doing this analysis in the first place, is just to see, because erythromycin is the only thing that's left out there, whether or not, you know, we have the data to say whether it's you know, worth it to keep using or not.
Yeah.
As far as alternative methods or alternative drugs, I I'm going to leave that to the pharmaceutical companies, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, our practice guidelines are only for to test once in pregnancy, usually at the first trimester visit for gonorrhea and chlamydia.
Right.
High risk, maybe you check twice.
Right, maybe in the third trimester.
But we're certainly not checking people when they come in to deliver, and that's the time of exposure.
Right.
And I think as a field, we don't really hear much about that.
Yeah.
They hand the baby off and they're gone.
So, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, stay tuned.
Thank you so much.